welcome to this week's edition of See You at the Show. This is Eric Schacht, and I am here with Linda Evans and a youngster, Wade Schacht, in the studio. How are you guys doing today?
Good, good.
It's going all right?
Yeah.
Great.
You don't seem like a youngster.
Thank you. I think.
Young man.
Yeah. I guess if you saw him on stage this week as Gomez in Adam's Family, yeah, you probably wouldn't call him a youngster.
Yeah.
That would be a grown man show, definitely. Congratulations on that, Wade.
Thank you.
A heck of a run.
Thank you.
And just one of so many things going on this weekend. So, Linda, you and I have been to like 7 or 8 shows in the last 8 nights. We deserve an award or something. Or maybe we should just say that we are so, you know, blessed to be able to do it. We had, and this doesn't even count the fact that we were, you still haven't seen Realistic Joneses yet, so you don't get bonus points for that.
Well, although I'm working box office Friday night and Saturday night for Realistic Joneses, so come out and see me at the box office and go in and see the show.
I will see you, because I need to see it again. I've only seen it once, and if my mom and stepdad have seen it twice, I gotta at least reach their standard. But after 4 shows of The Addams Family, and then we also had Theory of Relativity at Urbana. You and I were at Indigo Girls.
Yes.
Amazing.
Great show.
Man, if we ever expand to an hour, we can start like covering shows like that, I suppose. But, and then She Kills Monsters was at Centennial. And now we open up tonight at Parkland with another show. So this is theater heaven. It was such a slow summer towards the end with September, August, there were just not many shows going on, and now you can literally see new shows every week, and there's so much stuff coming up. So we have our hands full today to recap things that are happening and talk about things that are going to happen. So last night, Matthew Green, the director of Peter and the Starcatcher, opened up the doors. I guess it was a quasi-invited dress. It wasn't just us. There were probably 10 or 15
right.
people there. And they put on a show not at all like a dress. It seemed like opening night quality. Well, what did you think of it?
I didn't know what to expect. Even though my oldest, Parker Evans, is in it, I knew it was kind of the precursor to the Peter Pan story. But that's all I knew. And so I wasn't sure what to expect. So it starts out and it... Like, you have to be paying attention right away, I feel like.
Right.
And there's a lot going on, and there's a lot of, like, one-liners that I am glad I get to see it again tonight. And I liked it. I wasn't really sure what to expect, and I love everybody who's involved with it. And, but I think I need to see it again to get the full effect of everything.
I think it would actually help to know a little bit about it, because
yes.
I didn't know... I'd never seen it on Broadway or off-Broadway, and I didn't read it before going over. Just a little bit of a summary to know what to expect in terms of who the characters were going to be, because the cast is just... I mean, I say this about several shows in town. Like, I definitely said it about Realistic Joneses when you have an all-star cast, and that's an all-star cast at the station right now. But to have a cast of 13 and... still be able to say that's an all-star cast. It's some of my favorite actors in town, some of the best actors in town, and in some really well-suited roles. So I kind of just wanted to familiarize myself with the cast and what they were going to be portraying. But you're right, the show was fast.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I don't know what the technical term for it, but the ensemble sort of narration where we're getting explained to by characters just finishing each other's sentences, and so it was almost like choreographed verbiage, and it was fast.
And not really, you know, some shows kind of introduce you to the main characters or whatever. It's a very ensemble piece, although there are main characters, but they're almost the entire cast is on stage a lot of the time, and they're all doing different things, and a lot of times they'll pipe up with one line or another line, even though they're not the main focus of that particular scene. It's kind of interesting. So I feel like it goes right into it. There's no like, there's a little bit of an introduction, but it's not quietly done. It's like rapid fire.
Yeah. It would have been fun, I suppose, to have done what we've usually done and sit down with some of the cast and talk about it, because that was a very unique way to start a mm-hmm. show, and it's just a very unique show. There's some music, definitely not a musical, mm-hmm. Lots of comedy, but I suppose it's more than just a comedy. There is because it is actually seriously setting the backstory.
And there's some really sad kind of stories to it too. The orphans, I mean, it gets kind of dark. I mean, I think kids are fine to go see it. There's really nothing really inappropriate, but like it's kind of a dark backstory for the orphans.
Yeah. I guess they do get treated pretty poorly,
yeah,
don't they?
And and they continue to be treated poorly. And that's kind of a theme for Peter, that adults don't tell the truth and stuff. And that, I mean, some of that stuff is kind of sad, you know, but then there's all this funny stuff too.
Right.
And Jace plays Blackstache, and he's so funny, but he's also like the bad guy, you know, and it's kind of fun. You know, he's really good at that.
Yeah. And that was just, I mean, I was, when I saw when the cast came out, it was just,
yeah.
I don't know. It's like, yay, brilliant, Matthew, but hey, that's so obvious.
Right.
It was, and obvious in a good way, because Jace, and it turns out that Jace and Jace Jameson as Blackstache, and then also Jess Schlipf as Peter, were in the show when Twin City Theater Company did it in 2016, but they weren't in these roles.
Right. Jace's third time doing.
Oh, really?
Theater, I think.
And his first time as Blackstache.
First time as Blackstache. Yeah.
Well, the man does facial hair like nobody else in town. Right. There's no doubt about that.
It's perfect.
And wait, you tried to grow a little mustache for Gomez, right?
Yeah, I gave up after about a week when it didn't turn into much more than some darker peach fuzz. So.
Right. Yeah. Well, Jace is something to aspire to in that department.
Yeah.
Although I don't know that he, you know, I think doing the Gomez pencil thin would just not have been his thing.
Yeah,
we need big, we need handlebars and stuff to go Jace style. But okay, so we've kind of said it was not necessarily, we didn't know what to expect, and there was some complicated traction with it. But I'll tell you, there were some amazing performances, and we could pretty much just go down the list.
Mm-hmm.
But even though there was kind of a darkish story with the Lost Boys, I loved what Parker and his little buddy had together. I don't think either one of them was ever in a scene without the other one, right?
Right, they're always together, and they're really sweet together. They're friends off stage.
Okay, and this is Tom Billum, who I haven't seen before. Has he been in other shows?
He's been in a few Parkland shows before, yeah. Servant of Two Masters, I think he was in Servant of Two Masters, and I'm forgetting the other one that was last year. But yeah, so I've seen him in a few things before, and he and Parker are actually friends off stage.
Yeah,
so
well, that must be part of why it worked. Because
I think so.
Because I think you as the mom probably saw him in some of the situations and thought it seemed dark, but a little bit. But I always thought, those two guys are having such fun together.
Right, they definitely seem very sweet and innocent. It's more Peter's backstory that makes me really, it just seemed really sad, you know, because they kind of show him being mistreated at the orphanage a little bit. I feel bad for Peter for a lot of the show, but, you know, he also comes into his own, so. And Jess is perfect for that. I saw them last in Fun Home.
Dima was
in Fun Home with Jess, and that was the first time I think that I really saw Jess in something, and they just blew me away.
I've seen Jess do a lot of different roles, and the first time I saw Jess was 2013 in Chess, and they were incredible. Just a lot of power from a little person, and that's kind of what Peter is.
Exactly. Yeah. And I love Emmeline as Molly too. I think Molly and Jess have a very good rapport too, which they need to have. And Emmeline comes off as kind of a young motherly figure to them, you know.
Right.
She does that very well.
So yeah, it was I think it's one of the nuanced things about that character, not really complicated, but it's nuanced how Emmeline can be so maternal, and yet also there are scenes when it's like, yeah, she's 13, just like
they
are.
Right.
And, but just, having to, so she was like a really grounded character. I thought her accent was perfect, mm-hmm. and not played up or not good enough. It was perfect. And she was, she brought a seriousness to it, even though there were those amazing dodo conversations mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. she had with Lincoln.
Yeah, they were, yeah.
And it's hard to describe. I wish that I could, but that is just perfectly done. Uh-huh. And it was cool also to see somebody as with the gravitas of Lincoln Macula doing dodo calls to his daughter.
It was perfect. It was so much fun to see because he automatically gives off this kind of feeling of this British, very regal kind of guy, and easily, and then to be funny with the dodo part, and it's a great part for him too.
Yeah, and so we're talking about Peter and the Starcatcher. Tonight is opening night at Parkland. It's in the Big Theater, which has some sort of a fancy name to it, but I don't ever remember what it is. I just call it the Big Theater, and then Theater
named
in the
after
Round.
The Miners, I think.
Yes,
so
the Harold H. Minor Theater.
Yeah, so it's called the Minor Theater, but that always makes me sound like it's small, even though it's somebody's last name. Minor Theater makes me, so yeah. But it's the bigger theater.
Right, so I'll now remember that because of the irony of it being the major theater.
Right, exactly.
Even though it's the minor theater.
That's the way I remember it.
And I would be completely, I would want to go down the list, and next I can say it was amazing to see Zoe Dunn up on stage again, and having a real substantive role, because I've been like wanting that for a long time. But Rachel Hemanowski is somebody that I've only seen twice mm-hmm. before that I can remember in very serious roles, both with Matthew, once as a, once as he directed her, and then they were in Constellations together.
Oh, right.
And those are very, very serious shows. And she got probably the funnest role as me. It was the only thing that was played as cartoonish, because Jace didn't play Black Stash as like a cartoon villain.
Right.
There's some complexity. He's developing the backstory and everything. But Smee is just cartoon sidekick.
Hilarious. She was hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, everything she said I found funny. Yeah. She was very funny. And she's a small statured person, but she's like bigger than life in this. Like she's got some, it's just interesting. Like I could hear everything she had to say really well, you know, like her voice carries, and it was, I don't know, I really enjoyed her a lot. And anytime she went, her and Laura, when they weren't on stage, I was like, oh, I wish they were back on stage.
Yeah, yeah, poor Laura got killed off in the first act.
I was sad about that.
Right, I always loved Laura, and she was so fierce in Marisol, but there was something about the way she wore that beard,
mm-hmm.
And then just, she was the pirate, she was like, she controlled the stage.
Yeah, she was.
I'd like to see a separate show just about that character.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And they all have very interesting characters, and the set is very sparse. I mean, it's a lot is left to your imagination throughout the show.
Right.
You kind of have to pay attention to the dialogue to know what's going on.
Right. And Nick Shaw is the set designer. And I've seen some very elaborate sets mm-hmm. at Parkland before. And even the set for like Addams Family at Central was elaborate.
Right.
It was giant and beautiful and magnificent. But this was really just those two staircases.
Mm-hmm.
And they did so much with them, though. I couldn't believe how versatile they were. And I don't think I appreciated it until they like turned one staircase around to represent the chase. And mm-hmm. then I was like, oh my gosh, those are totally two masks. And I got it. And then when poor Parker was in jail, when they flipped it around, I was like, this is really versatile. And
it was quite genius, I think, to the way they played such a small set in so many different ways.
Yeah.
It was, and the lighting was wonderful, and the props are amazing. I heard about a lot of the props from Stephanie Sorengen. She's also in the show, but she was the prop mistress, and she made all the props before they went into rehearsal, pretty
like
much.
Those umbrellas were cool.
Yeah, she's amazing. She thinks of everything. She helped out with a couple of the props we had a hard time with Farinelli and the King.
Oh,
and
great.
She's a great person. Last minute, she thinks up these things.
And did she play the piano?
Last night she did. It's a last minute switch for her to be playing. So I think she was a little bit late getting on for one of the scenes, because I think she had to leave the piano and get on. So they're still figuring that out. But
All right, so listeners, here's what your assignment is. We've got Peter and the Starcatcher at Parkland. It's going to be this week and next week. And they also, on the 17th, are having a sensory-free show, which is a great thing. I didn't feel my senses were overwhelmed at all.
Right.
But there were some, a lot of lighting choices that helped the, even when we walked in, being bathed in that blue was really neat. It gave me a great vibe for the rest of the show. But the 17th is their sensory-free show where sounds and lights will be modified for anybody who has issues with that. And I know that they're trying to draw families and kids in, and so they're probably also, that might be easier on some kids that who might be scared or have sensory issues. So look online for show times, but all the Parkland shows are going to start at 7:30, and I think that they have one matinee. Not plugging it perfectly, sorry. And then Realistic Jones is going to be going on at the station. Now, that's also going to be 7:30 every night this week, or every night through Saturday night. And I guess we're supposed to go there strike probably Saturday.
Yes,
so I'll striking. See you there. So then next week, Champaign Park District Junior Theater has Frozen. Wade, you're an alum of that program.
Yeah.
So, and you couldn't be in Frozen this year because of Adams.
Right.
So what do we have to look forward to in that show? What's the cast shaping up like?
Well, I know probably most of the people who are going to be in this show. And I don't know, I've probably worked with them in the past 6 months if I, you know, look at most of the people in it. I know Bess Chamley is going to be playing Elsa. If you've seen her in anything, you know that's an obvious choice. She's got an amazing voice, and I don't know if you saw the See I Living clip, but she was amazing on there also.
Oh, let's just listen to just 30 seconds of Bess Chamley as Elsa.
My power flurries through the air into the my soul is spiraling in frozen fractals all around, and one thought crystallizes like an icy blast. I'm never going back, the past is in the past.
Bess Chamley. And that's not the greatest recording. That's going from CI Living with mediocre equipment, I hear, to my phone, to YouTube, to studio, and Bess still has it. So hopefully I can get her maybe in the studio sometime between now and next week to do a little bit more. And Kellen is Anna.
Anna,
sorry.
Yeah, it's Anna. Yeah, Kellen, I mean, she comes from an amazing musical family, so she's always fun to watch.
Yeah, Kellen Morber's fantastic. Yeah. I scouted her out as the nanny in 101 Dalmatians as somebody who is going places, and she sure has.
Yeah.
So we're talking about shows, and we've got tons of auditions coming up. I think that's one of the things that just I've been tracking it a little bit, but until I updated the See You at the Show website today, I didn't really realize the extent of auditions. And in particular, December 7th is a little bit insane.
It's insane. People are going to be like running around at different locations doing all these auditions.
I wish that I could somehow find out if anybody is actually going to audition for 5 shows in one day, but it's possible.
If you are, let us know.
Yes.
I want to know. I know several people who are going to be auditioning at different locations because we've got some at the station, then we've got some at the library, and then at Parkland, so.
No, message us at See You at the Show, or comment on one of our posts or something if you are going to interview for 5 shows, because I want to interview you about how you're going to do this and what your aspirations are. So here's what we have this Saturday. Matthew Green, back in the director seat already.
Yeah, right away.
Is going to be auditioning for The Moors, 5 female roles. And rehearsals are going to start up on December 3rd, and that show opens January 16th.
And I'll be at those, I'm helping out with those auditions. So
that's great.
At the station from 11 to 2. But sign up online if you can. Walk-ins are fine too.
Yeah. And I've got links to all the audition information on the See You at the Show website, and I posted that on the See You at the Show Facebook page. And so then next week, or on December 7th, there's going to be Twin City Theater Company Bus Stop, directed by John Tilford. There's I Hate Hamlet and Falsettos at the station. Those are auditions are going on jointly at the station, and that's going to be from 9 to 3. Falsettos is obviously a musical. interestingly, for both, do you read what you do for the audition for those shows?
That's so funny because I'm producing I Hate Hamlet, so I should know what we're supposed to be doing.
No, you have to come up with a minute-long personal comedic story.
Oh, you know.
Yeah, so I was asking Wade, like, what are the funniest stories I've told you about my life? Because I was drawing a blank. So
Latrell did that for Elephant's Graveyard. That's what she did for auditions for Elephant's Graveyard, too.
Well, maybe I can work my way in to sit in on some of these auditions, because I think that sounds really cool. And then at Parkland, also on Saturday, December 7th, How I Learned to Drive, and Chicago, everybody in town talking about Chicago, huge musical, and Abby Gailey's directing it. So in this, in getting all of this audition buzz going, I've on Facebook, I noticed that some posts this week, including one from Cheryl Forrest Morganson, a friend of mine, and she's a vocal coach, pianist, and doctoral student in accompanying and vocal coaching, and she started posting some audition tips. And since she was the music director for Young Frankenstein and the vocal director for Wizard of Oz, I was kind of paying attention. And then I noticed she posted another audition tip the next day. And so I said, Cheryl, you got to come on the show. So Cheryl, thanks for coming on. See you at the show. Were these posts that you posted inspired by the fact that there are so many huge musical auditions coming up?
Absolutely. A few of my dear friends from other shows have reached out to me, and I wanted to start, bluntly, it was a little bit of being lazy. I didn't want to keep repeating myself with some of the same basic information. I wanted to cover all my bases, make sure all of my friends had what they needed to go into these auditions, and that inspired these little videos I put up on Facebook, and you saw them.
I did, and they caught my eye a lot. I think just generally I'm on the lookout for theater-related things, but also I'm somebody that is always considering my next audition. And so I watched with great interest the first one. And then when I saw the second one, I was like, this woman is onto something. So let's let's get her on the show and talk to her about it. And so I kind of took your three separate posts and made a list. And I kind of want to go through and give you a chance to elaborate on the first one, and this is the one you said was going to be on your tombstone. If you're going to a vocal audition, put sheet music in a binder. I take it you've had some bad experiences with that.
I think I accompanied my first audition back in 91. Yes, it is such a simple thing, but the music that you have in your hands as you walk into an audition is going to be put in front of a pianist. Basic physics apply. If that music is loosely sheets, or worse yet, if you've been worrying it and it's bound up or crumpled up, it's going to fall on the floor and there goes your audition. So just please get a binder, borrow one from someone who's auditioning right before you or right after you. Please just don't walk in with any loose music.
I came up with a little catchy saying for you. Don't put your accompanist in a bind. Put your music in a binder.
Oh my God, that's perfect. I was going to say steal that, but that's not appropriate. I will borrow that and credit you till the day I die. Thank you.
Okay. I was going to say registered trademark really fast afterwards, but you got rights to it before I said it. So it's all you. Any discretion to go a cappella, or would that be a huge mistake?
That is generally a problem. At least when I've been in music director mode, I want to hear that someone can match pitch to an instrument, because very few musicals are done substantially a cappella. If someone comes in and says, "Oh, I just want to sing a cappella," if I'm in the casting room, I will absolutely say, "Okay, great. Now sing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, or sing the Star Spangled Banner. Prove that you can match pitch to an instrument."
Nice. Okay. Yeah. So I would be exposed. All right. Well, that's a nice segue to your tip number five, which is don't audition without practicing what you're going to say to the pianist. So what are the sorts of things you're talking about there?
If you walk in and you think, okay, I have 10 seconds to talk to the pianist, you're going to say hi, you're going to say your name, you're going to put the music down. Ideally, it's in a binder. Ideally, it's labeled clearly start and stop. You don't need to tell me that then. If it's labeled, I can read. I've got eyes. The biggest thing I want is to know if there are any tempo changes. And those can be just indicated by a highlighter. And other than that, I want to know your tempo and just kind of indicating it softly by the side of the piano, sing the first line. That's generally all I need. And then you can go off and you can kill it, your audition, and I will be there supporting you.
Okay. Backtracking then to the pretty much the first step, which is picking a song. when you reference picking a song in the same soundscape of the musical, what is the same sonic soundscape? What do you mean by sonic soundscape?
So while we can get very, very granular about how we divide up musicals, there generally are groups of musicals you can group together. And if you're auditioning for, say, Wizard of Oz, bringing in something like From the Sound of Music would be appropriate because they have kind of the same vocal production quality. They're both like golden era of Broadway. If I was auditioning for American Idiot, which is the musical based on Green Day's music, I would not come in with Somewhere Over the Rainbow because it just wouldn't sound right.
Well, I thought you had a good tip of looking at the library of the person who created the musical that you're auditioning for.
Yes. So, for instance, Chicago is coming up. That's a book written by Kander and Ebb, and it was choreographed by Bob Fosse. If I was auditioning for Chicago, just throwing this out there, I would instantly look at Cabaret. I would look at Sweet Charity. That there are going to be similarities that various creative teams have. And if you're stuck on what to audition with, that's always a very good place to start.
The idea of doing an audition song as a monologue was interesting to me. So what would I get out of doing that?
When you do a song and you have not prepared it as a monologue, I will read it as a pretty singing exercise. Whereas if you take and strip the text away and figure out, okay, at this point the character discovers this, or at this point the character decides to do something, and then you go back and put it in the music, that will become much more of, we get to see you acting through your singing rather than merely singing and sounding pretty, but really doing nothing else for us.
The next one you say is that don't audition without recording yourself first. And from your elaboration on that, it sounded like you're not talking about audio recording, you're talking about video recording yourself.
Yes, we all have nervous tics, and you know, even actors, even professional actors, and the trick is to figure out what they are so that you can kind of dial them down, if not eliminate them entirely. And some people, they twist rings, other people shift back and forth. One guy that I remember in musical Carrie, I just assisted with that at Illini Student Musicals. God bless this guy. I love him to bits and pieces, but when he sings, he closes his eyes. And it's not a good thing when you're singing in a musical to close your eyes the entire song. And when he opened his eyes, it was great. But until someone told him, or until you look at a recording of yourself, you're not necessarily going to know what you're projecting.
And some of the other ones I think I'm going to put online, they have to do with matching up age demographics, being careful about race and sexuality. One thing that you didn't mention was gender. So what do you think about singing songs that are traditionally sung by or cast as somebody from the opposite gender?
Okay, so that one, fantastic question. If you are walking in with something that is very traditionally sung by someone who you don't look like, be careful, be informed. I would say, for instance, with Chicago, I would not hesitate to bring in a jazz standard, and jazz standards don't always match up with your gender presentation, and it's everyone kind of considers it as fine to sing that song, even if the pronouns are a little off. But because we're acting, just be careful. I think that's a general good piece of advice no matter what.
Okay. Well, Cheryl, thanks for joining us on See You at the Show to talk about audition.
You take.
All right. That was Cheryl Forrest Morganson. There are also lots of other amazing resources in our community for helping you prepare for auditions and just vocal train generally. There's Class Act and Jackie Lowenstein, Thomas Howey, Morgan Voice Studios with Jason and Nicole. So I'm going to post a separate list with all those resources, so you can find people like Cheryl. You can have access to this top 10 list that she's been putting together, and then also the other great resources, some of which I know personally to be fantastic. So otherwise, one thing I forgot before, in addition to Frozen next week at St. Thomas More High School, it's a play, Puffs, that is going to be also opening on November 21st and running through the 23rd, just like Frozen is. Or did you
Frozen
say Frozen has a Sunday?
The 24th.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM.